You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Here comes the rush, and it gets it away. It's picked up, and a chance to take it back the other way. On the run is Rashard Leonard. Give to Sherman, busts in, touchdown. Corner blitz coming. Lule stands, and that pass is picked off. Intercepted by Khalid Lule. Lule back to throw again. Fires the pass, is caught by Ableton again. Lost the football. Bounce and lose. The tie gets in the game. They have it. Second and short. Valeros looks to the end zone, and the pass is caught. Touchdown, Jalen Saunders.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, you made a bit of a mistake last week, and you got to give a little apology out to our loyal listeners. You kind of screwed up on your Canadian picks with our all Canadian team last week.
I did, and yes, my apologies to everyone out there. Now, the Amondo Sewell one, I live in Edmonton, and he comes into my place of work all year round. I know that he lives in Edmonton all year round, so I just assumed that he was considered a Canadian. Now, I was wrong, and that was stupid of me, but I will correct it with these picks, these two picks this week. And the Clarence Denmark one, I had four Canadian receivers. The last second, I switched one out because I thought Denmark was Canadian. I don't have any excuses for that one. That was just... I just thought he was. So, my apologies.
Boneheaded maneuver, but that's okay. We all make mistakes. I make them all the time. So, it's all good, Mike. But who are your picks? Who you put sliding in there at receiver and defensive tackle now?
I was thinking Cleon Lang at first, but I knew that you picked him, so I'm going a little different. Even though Atkinson has had his injury troubles, and he still does, I'm going with Atkinson. I think he's when he's in there, he's a hell of a player. We saw that last year at the tail end of the season. So, I'm going to go with Michael Atkinson from the Ticats. And then I'll slide in Devon Bailey. I know he hasn't done much in the league, but the little time that I've seen him, I've been impressed when he's with Edmonton. So I'm hoping that he'll be a big star in the league one of these days and make my pick look smart.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that I've always been high on too, and just waiting for him to break out, and it never happened. I think he's in Montreal now, if I'm not mistaken. So hopefully some good things will come that kid's way. And, you know, I can't really fault you for the Michael Atkinson pick. I love him as a player. I don't know if he's the second best defensive tackle Canadian right now, but I could definitely see down the road him being one of those guys who... Do you remember the guy that played for the Ticats, Matt Kirk, maybe about a half dozen years or so ago?
Yeah, slightly.
Michael Atkinson reminds me of a guy like that, just a guy you plug in the middle of that defensive line, you don't really worry about, and I could see him blossoming into a star in this league for sure. So I can't really fault you for either of those picks, Mike.
Excellent. My apologies again to the listeners out there.
Yeah, we make mistakes every now and then, and I would think that seeing one player year-round would probably lead you to believe that he's a Canadian, because no offense to Edmonton, I'm sure it's a lovely city, but could you imagine being an American guy, probably from the south somewhere, deciding to take up year-long residence in Edmonton? It's pretty cold up there in the winter.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So, you know, it happens, I guess.
All right, so moving on, we got to talk about the last Ticats game. Unfortunately, our boys in black and gold dropped another one. This time, a 41-26 loss to the BC Lions. And what sucks most about this is that despite losing by 15, this was very easily the Ticats' best game so far of 2017. We saw the defense make some plays. We saw the offense move the ball and score. But I think the big problem in this game was there were too many lulls on both sides of the ball. We saw the offense go into kind of a tailspin in the second and third quarter. In the second half, the defense just couldn't get it together. And I think that what that shows, to me at least, is that this Ticats team will pretty much have to play a perfect game if they want to win this year. What do you think, Mike?
Perfect game, that's a tough thing to do, but they're going to have to be really, really close to perfect. I mean, they're just not getting it done right now, and they did improve in some ways, which we'll talk about in this last game, but yeah, they're going to have to bring it. I mean, there's a lot of tough competition this year. There's a lot of good teams, so they're going to have to play some pretty damn good football to win some games.
So let's talk about some pretty damn good football. Let's talk about the offense, which I think, looked really good for two quarters of this game. The first quarter and the fourth quarter, I thought they were excellent. And I want to start off by talking about Zach Collaros. I think this was very easily, and I think we'll say this throughout most of the episode, this was easily his best game of the year. 30 for 48 for 361 yards. Just the one touchdown pass, though, and one interception. But he also ran the ball twice for 22 yards. So he was still rushed on some throws, I feel, and I think he missed a couple on his own. But all in all, I thought he played pretty well. What do you think?
Definitely the best performance of the season. The first, like you said, the first and fourth quarters were great. And the second quarter wasn't bad either. I mean, they had 9 points in the second quarter. It just really fell apart near the end of that second quarter, where BC scored two touchdowns and took the lead and never really looked back. You know, it was really soul crushing that the end of that second quarter.
It sure was. And you thought that when they kicked the field goal at the end of the second quarter on that last drive, maybe, okay, kind of like the Toronto game where they get the big play at the end of the half, and you're thinking, okay, maybe they could turn this around. And then BC just came out in the second half and dominated throughout the entire third quarter. And then by the time the Ticats got it back together again, it was pretty much too little too late. Ross Scheuermann, I thought he looked pretty darn good. It was nice to see the run game actually work. There were holes there. He was very direct in where he was going. He made some people miss. He only picked up 58 yards on the ground, and he only had 8 carries, which to me is still a problem. But he really did make the most out of his opportunities, and I think this performance pretty much should tell fans who are probably going to dislike this that I don't think we're going to see C.J. Gable in a Ticats uniform for a very long time, if at all, ever again. I think a game like that from Scheuermann where he gets, you know, 8 carries and puts up 58 yards, scored a touchdown. I think that's all they really need out of the running back. And if you're getting that from an American rookie over an American vet, they're going to go with that rookie every day of the week.
Yeah, it would not surprise me if we don't see him again. You know, I think they'll probably keep him in the lineup on the roster, but Shoreman's probably going to be the starter going forward. And I liked what I saw as well. You know, 8 carries for 58 yards, like you said, 7.2-yard average. His longest run was 20 yards. He had a touchdown. So, yeah, I liked the way he ran the ball. I thought that he had some good runs in there. That's a pretty good average, 7.2. I'd take that any game. You know, 8 carries is a lot for this team, but it needs to be more, like we've been talking about for 17 years.
You know what's funny, too, is I noticed him on some pass plays. I actually watched him. His pass blocking was actually pretty good. I don't think it was up to C.J. Gable's level. I still think C.J. Gable is probably the best blocking back in this league. But I saw a Scheuermann pick up some blitzes and give Zach a couple extra seconds to make some plays. And that's really what the running back's got to do in this offense. So you see him produce on the ground. You know he can catch the ball in the air. Now he's doing better in the pass blocking. It's pretty much his job to lose now. It's an injury will be what replaces him, and that's probably about it.
Yeah, I'd have to totally agree. And another player that had a great game was Jalen Saunders once again.
Oh, dude, he was awesome.
Huge numbers.
Awesome.
5 receptions, 147 yards, a touchdown, a long pass reception for 60 yards. I mean, this guy's a keeper, right?
Oh, absolutely. This guy is a star in the making. He's played 2 games for this team. He's the team's leading receiver. He has just been money for this team so far. What a game he had. And on the touchdown catch, I was there, obviously live at Tim Hortons Field, and that touchdown came in the end zone that I'm closest to. I don't sit in the end zone, but we're closer where I sit. We're about the 35-40-yard line, so we're closer to one zone. He turned twice to find that ball in the air and still came down with it. It was remarkable. Now, it sucks. You could say, oh, look, he missed. He didn't know where the ball was. He lost it. But to be able to turn once, turn a second time, then turn again to find the ball and catch it, that's remarkable. This kid has been fantastic, and I think we should have seen this coming. As much as you can say, oh, he was a draft pick in the NFL, that doesn't really matter, but he went to Oklahoma, and Oklahoma produces good football players, and he looks to me, doesn't have the same size, probably a little bit quicker, but he reminds me of when this team got Terrence Tolliver. Terrence Tolliver came out of LSU, had a pedigree as a good football player, and came in and he started as a rookie and played great, and now we're seeing Saunders kind of do the same. This kid looks like he's going to be an absolute star in this league. I can't wait to see more of him.
Yeah, me as well. And Jasper Collins had a good game, too. I mean, a lot of these receivers had pretty good numbers. Zach really distributed the ball to a lot of players here. You know, Tasker had 7 receptions. Mike Jones had 4 for 44 yards.
I wanted to bring him up. I have been really happy with the production we've seen out of Mike Jones in his second season. He plays that wide side receiver position, and he keeps having these solid performances. Like you said, four catches for 44 yards. He caught the two-point convert on the team's last touchdown. I can see now why Spencer Watt was let go and why they put this guy in the starting lineup, because he can make plays.
Yeah, he's a dynamic guy out there. I mean, that's what they need at that position, is a really fast guy that can get open and make some plays like he's been doing all season long. So let's just hope that all these receivers can have big numbers like this going forward, because that's what we're going to need. We're going to need a lot of receivers making a lot of plays, putting up big yards, and scoring touchdowns.
Well, and we haven't even seen the best out of Luke Kasker yet. So all these guys, all these unknowns, for lack of a better word, are making plays. Once Kasker gets going, this might be a pretty solid receiving core. But it's not all good news, Mike. We have to talk about this offense blowing it on nine straight drives when I feel that they had the Lions on the ropes. They went nine straight drives from the about halfway through the second quarter to the beginning of the fourth quarter. They go two and out seven times. They kicked one field goal. And they had the interception. This came at a point when the defense was playing pretty darn good. They forced three turnovers. They weren't allowing the Lions to score. The Lions went four straight drives without finding the end zone or kicking a field goal. The Ticats had a major chance to bury the Lions here, and they kind of blew it. And, it just feels like if you look at this game and you want to pinpoint something why this team lost, a major reason is that dry spell in the second and third quarters.
Yeah, you got to score. You can't just let a team like the BC Lions hang around. You have to, put the points up on the board when you have the opportunity. And seven two and outs in a row, or whatever you just said, that is just bad offensive football right there. I mean, for all the good things we just talked about, that's just horrible.
Yeah, well, and that's what, like I said, that is kind of what sunk this team in the end. They had a chance. They were home. The momentum was on their side. They put up a touchdown. The Lions aren't getting much traction. Jonathan Jennings is knocked out of the game. Lule comes in, and who ended up having a fabulous game, but it came later. Like it's like he needed time to get going, and when the opportunities were there, the Ticats did not seize him, and that's why they lost this game. Defensively, though, Mike, what stood out to you, good and bad?
Well, the bad was secondary. I mean, Lule comes in, he puts up 436 yards, three touchdowns. Yes, he had the two interceptions. I believe those were both in the second quarter. And then the second half started, and he was just on fire. The Ticats could not stop this passing attack, and it was ugly. It was really ugly in the second half.
It was especially ugly when he was throwing to number 17, Nick Moore. Feasted on the Ticats DBs. Most notably, to my eye, was number 26, Ethan Davis. He just had his lunch handed to him. Nick Moore goes for what, 220, I think it was?
Yep.
The Ticats just, there's one guy who's going to go off in every receiving core, and Adarius Bowman and Brandon Zylstra are coming to town. Fidel Hazleton, they're coming here on Thursday, and one of those guys is going to get points. So if you're playing CFL Fantasy, and you pick the right Edmonton receiver, you're going to get a lot of points off them, because there's one guy in every receiving core that feasts on the secondary, and this week it was Nick Moore.
Yeah, Nick Moore is a guy that had a lot of high expectations when he first started, and he's had some good seasons, but I don't think he's ever had a game like this. This was just ungodly. And he had the majority of the receptions. I mean, after that, the most receptions was five by Arsenal. Brian Burnham didn't really have much of a game except for that spectacular catch in the end zone. He only had two receptions for 9 yards. So, yeah, Nick Moore just ate us alive. And, I don't think Ethan Davis is going to have he might stick around, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was released shortly.
Well, from the reports, we're recording this late Tuesday night, reports from practice today is that Keon Lynn, who played Sam linebacker, which I'm curious if you have any opinions on how he played in place of Will Hill. Will Hill's now back from his one-game suspension, so he goes back to Sam. Keon Lynn is kicking out to the boundary corner spot, which Ethan Davis played, and Davis apparently is now either on the practice roster or on the one-game injured list. It's doubtful that he will play. So it's as much as you don't want to see guys lose their jobs, because these guys got to feed their families too. It's nice to see the team go, you know what? You didn't play well enough to earn a spot on this roster, and now they're going to move on from him. What else defensively? There was some good stuff. Even from the secondary, there was some good stuff. There's one guy in particular I think you can shout out as having a pretty darn good game.
Oh, absolutely. Richard Leonard. Now we haven't. He's going to be the player of the game for this week. I gave it away already, but this guy was on fire. I mean, two picks and fumble recovery, I believe. It's just he was the bright spot in the secondary for sure this game. He was on fire.
Yeah, he especially that first half, he was just very first play of the game, interception. Like you see that and you're like, okay, oh my god, okay, maybe this team's going to do something, and then obviously they lost, but you can't say that Leonard didn't do his job in this game. Nearly returned a 2-point convert attempt for 2 points itself. That guy earned his keep against BC for sure.
Maybe I'm crazy, but the defensive line has not been overly impressive this year so far. They had two sacks in this game, but it seems that like every team we play, the quarterback has a lot of time to throw and make his completions. I mean, obviously, because we've been torn apart pretty much every single game in the secondary. And if there was, you know, a lot of pressure from the defensive line, then maybe this would not be happening.
I think they were better in this game, though, Mike. Ted Laurent, I think, had a really good game, to be honest. Obviously, he had – did he have one of the sacks or did he have both?
Let's take a look here. Capicotti had one.
You're
Teddy
right.
had – yeah. Yeah, Teddy had one. Yep.
Okay, I thought he played well. I did, and I did see some pressure. The problem was Lule was able to evade it, and then there was no. But the thing is there was no contain. Like they would rush him, he would evade the rush, and then he'd have his time to pick his spot. Right. So, like, I do agree with you that I think the defensive line has been a little invisible this year. We really haven't heard much from John Chick. We really haven't heard much from Adrian Tracy. Maybe that'll pick up. But, yeah, I would have to agree that the defensive line play has been underwhelming, to say the least.
Yeah, I think that really needs to step up if we're going to improve on defense now. But maybe it's not all the players' fault. Maybe there's some schemes going on here that aren't really effective, you know, from the coaching staff.
Well, that's entirely possible. I got to be honest with you. There was I noticed Nick Moore started just beasting. I started paying attention to him and who was guarding him, and I don't know if it was Davis fearing that he was going to get beat deep, or if it was a scheme issue, or what it was. But there were times when he was playing 9-10 yards off the ball, and he would backpedal about 13 yards down, and it's like you're giving up the first down. Nick Moore does a 10-yard button hook. He's got a first down, and I'm watching it, and it's repeatedly happening. It's just I don't know if that's the scheme or if that's the player. I don't know, but it was tough to watch.
Yeah, that's can't give him too much room. I mean, they'll take that all game long, and they pretty much did.
They pretty much did. Anything else on the defense that you'd like to touch on?
Not really. That's about it. You know, secondary was okay at times, pretty good at times, and horrific in the second half.
Yeah, again, I noticed this team not being able to get off the field on second and long. Once again, this was an issue, and it's been an issue since day one of this season. I know you say it goes back further seasons, and I'm sure you're right. I'm just noticing it, at least I'm focusing on it this year. It was crystal clear against Toronto, clear again against Saskatchewan, and clear again against BC. This team gets the opportunity, gets BC in second and 20. And this is the one time they actually got off the field, but they gave up a screen pass to Jeremiah Johnson where he picked up like 17 yards. It's like, guys, like second and 20, the best they should be is third and 10. Like, you can't be giving this up. And it seems like every single time that a team gets into a second after a sack or after a minimal yard gain on a rush, the teams are able to pick it up. This is going to be a problem going forward. And if you think it's going to get any easier against this with this team going up against the Edmonton Eskimos and their star-studded offense, you're out of your mind.
Yeah, I'll give you two examples from the years past. Very important second and longs. In the Grey Cup, Corey Sheets run, it was like second and 17 or something stupid.
Yep,
give
I remember.
That up. And then against Ottawa last year, you know, the Ellingson play. That was second and plus 10. So those are just two examples from the past couple of years.
Yep. No, those definitely stand out. They're definitely ones I remember. So I want to talk special teams for a bit here. I think we need to talk about Brandon Banks. I don't know if this is a scheme issue or if it's him, but he just does not seem to have that extra gear that made him so fearsome the last few years. He's got a very, very minuscule 16.3 return average on kickoffs and a long of just 25 in this past game against BC. That's just not going to cut it. 16 yards on a kickoff return? that's putting the team in very poor field position when other returners are getting 25 to 30 yards per average on their returns. 16 yards just doesn't cut it anymore. And again, like I said, I don't know if it's him or if it's the scheme, or it just seems like he's not the player we saw just a couple of years ago.
No, it doesn't seem that way. I was tweeting about it during the game that I just don't expect anything when he touches the ball anymore. And in the past, I expected the world when he touched the ball. I thought, oh, okay, we're going to get a touchdown, or he's going to return it, you know, 50 yards, 60 yards, get us in a good field position. And I just don't feel that way anymore. I'm with you. I do not know what the problem is. I don't know if he's lost a step. I don't know if it's the schemes. I don't know if it's the blockers in front of him that aren't opening up the holes. But something's wrong there, because he's just not getting the same production that he used to.
And with him taking a pay cut this year, with him being in a contract year, I would not be surprised if he is not on this team by the end of the season. And I would actually be surprised if he's brought back next year. I think they're going to move on from him, because for a guy who doesn't perform much in the offense, he's not doing it on – the reason he's not on the offense as a receiver is because they want to save him for special teams, but he's not doing it on special teams anymore. So what's his role with this team?
Yeah, and I even though he took a pay cut, I assume that he's still getting paid pretty well for a guy who just returns kicks, basically. So, yeah, if he doesn't if the special teams unit and him collectively don't pick up their games, I agree. I don't think he's going to be a Tiger Cat next year.
So last bit of special teams. So I've been doing this fun thing on Twitter. Every time some kicker misses a field goal, I say, you know who hasn't missed a field goal yet this year? Yep, Sergio Castillo. So I had to, do it myself. When he finally missed a kick, he missed an extra point against the Lions. I said, you know who has finally missed a kick this year? Yep, Sergio Castillo. And missing an extra point to me, you just shouldn't happen. But I still think that he's performed probably better than anyone could have expected, I think, at this point. And I think we can both agree that his first experience at Tim Hortons Field went a lot better than Brett Maher's did last year. If you remember, he had that game against BC in week two, which was his first game at Tim Hortons Field, and he went like 0-for-3 on field goals. He was bad. He was really, really bad. So I think Castillo kind of came out of that with just one missed extra point. He's still perfect on field goals. And I know fans are going to be clamoring for the team to bring in Swayze Waters, and we'll get to him in a little bit. But I honestly think that Castillo has earned his spot on this team. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree. And the field goal that he hit was a 48-yarder. So that's a long field goal. And he missed the extra point, and you shouldn't do that. But a lot of kickers do. A lot of kickers do in this league miss extra points. So that's not an excuse for him, but I've been very happy with his performance this year, for sure.
So one last thing about this game that it's a bit of a rant that I need to get off my chest. And I wrote about this in my game piece for Three Down Nation, but I also want to talk about it here. I don't know what the crossover is in the audience, so I figured everyone should get a chance to kind of hear my thoughts on this. So there are fans, and some of them I heard at the game, as the game was winding down, that are calling for Ken Austin to be fired immediately. One guy was yelling obscenities and talking about the welfare line or the unemployment line opens on Monday or some stupid crap like that. I'm not going to mince words here, Mike. If you think Ken Austin should be fired right now, you're an idiot. Because my answer to any time someone says fire the coach or cut the quarterback or whatever it is, it's like, okay, so who's going to replace him? You fire Ken Austin, who's your replacement? Seriously, right now there is no one out there to take this job. Plus, if you fire him, you're firing not only your head coach, you're firing your vice president of football operations, and you're very likely firing your GM, because I can't imagine that they'd fire Austin and keep Eric Tillman. They would probably, both of those guys would go together. So you're going to clear house after three games. I don't know if it's the hockey mentality that we have as Canadians, and that might be permeating in the minds of many CFL fans, but whenever has firing a coach mid-season in football, in the CFL, ever turn things around? It never does. You're not going to fire a coach and expect the team to miraculously become better. So honestly, if you're out there listening to the show thinking it's time to make a coaching change, get bent. You're an idiot. And I know you don't know what you're talking about. So I just need to get that off my chest. So Mike, with that out there, with me airing my grievance on this, you touched on it earlier, but who is your glorious player of the week for week number 4.
Gotta go with Richard Leonard. The guy was just, it's just so nice to see a guy come in the secondary and really show what he has, really have a great game. And this guy had a great game. I mean, 2 picks, fumble recovery. I mean, he was all over the field. You know, it might not have been, like, sustained for the whole game, but those stats are off the charts. And I hope he can keep it going forward, because we need it, my friend. And he had three tackles as well. So Richard Leonard is my player of the week.
Hey, if you get 2 interceptions and a fumble recovery, you've done your job as a player on the defense. It's up to the rest of the guys to elevate their play to you. So I think absolutely deserving. Excellent pick for you, Mike. So next week, I get the chance to pick again. And hopefully there'll be as many candidates as you had. You had a few guys that you could have picked from this game. And I think you picked a good one.
Yep, the Jalen Saunders was... You know, he could have been. I mean, maybe he should have been. But I was just so overjoyed that I saw a player jump out in the secondary and really grab my attention and all the Ticats fans' attention and the coach's attention, of course, too. And he was just spectacular.
Okay, so moving on, let's talk about some news. It's a story we covered last week, but Will Hill was officially suspended for 1 game after we recorded last week. He served that suspension against the BC Lions. He was fined an undisclosed amount for punching a Saskatchewan player. We talked about this on last week's show. I said there's no way he's getting more than 2 games. He got 1 game. I think the commissioner came out and explained himself very well as to why he got only 1 game. It's concurrent with previous suspensions like we talked about last week. So I think this was a fair punishment. Will Hill did not appeal his suspension, so he sat the game against the Lions. So I think we can now kind of put this behind us, don't you think?
Absolutely, and I'm glad that he didn't, you know, try to get out of the suspension. You know, just take – he deserved the 1 game, take it, and move on. And if it was any more than that, then he would have been appealing for sure, and it would have been – you know, the Players Association would have been up in arms and all this stuff, I believe. So, yeah, a lot of people were kind of pooping all over this decision. The new commish messed up his first big decision and all this stuff. I don't think that's the case at all. I think 1 game is good, and we'll move on.
Yeah, no, the people who think that are as stupid as the people that want Ken Austin fired right now. I'm sick of these people, everyone thinking that this is outrage. Everyone's, he touched a referee, and that's outrageous, And I don't know if you saw, but John Hodge, my colleague at Three Down Nation, he goes on Twitter at Blue Bomber Talk. He put out a very innocuous tweet with a GIF of Chad Johnson hugging a referee. And yes, it's not the same thing, but everyone's saying you can't touch a referee. And mm-hmm. Well, here's a guy touching a referee, and everyone thought it was cute. So again, context matters. And Will Hill was apparently very contrite in his. In his talk with the commissioner, said he knows he screwed up. He's come out and said he screwed up. And I think everyone who's on their high horse needs to get off it, because if Will Hill was suspended 1 game for this, what is Corey Johnson out in Winnipeg going to get for clubbing Ricky Ray in the head on the last play of the game? I saw no outrage there. I've been keeping track. Me and Tina Banshee on Twitter, I'm sure you follow her as well. We're kind of, both of us are keeping track and seeing where the outrage machine goes, because apparently putting your hands on an official is more outrageous than nearly taking the head off of a player. And everyone's about player safety, so it'll be interesting to see what Corey Johnson gets for that hit.
Yeah, that was ugly, man. That was, to me, like, I can't get inside a person's head, but the intent was there, I believe, and just unnecessary. Just a terrible, terrible hit.
And for it not to get flagged, that's the worst part.
No, it's just
the refs,
ridiculous.
The refs miss it. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I'm sure he's going to get fined for it. And to be honest with you, a suspension would be worthy there. If you're going to get a suspension for grabbing a ref by the scruff of the neck or by the collar even, I think clubbing a guy in the head with your arm is very much a suspendable offense. But we'll see what the league does, and maybe we'll talk about it next week.
Yep.
Okay, so last bit of Ticat news here is they signed a defensive back, and a pretty darn good one. We talked last week about A.J. Jefferson getting released, and hope maybe the team would bring him in. They decided to bring in Terrence Frederick, who played with Winnipeg last year, started 9 games for the team, had 33 tackles, an interception, and a sack. He was a surprise cut in training camp by the Bombers, and that's a pretty good player to bring in, and another piece possibly to help out this secondary. What do you think?
I'm hoping so, man. I'm really hoping so. This secondary needs to gel quickly. You know, we keep talking about the injuries, but I just don't know when they're going to come back. So the more help they can get, the better. And, you know, he started 9 games last year in a great defense with the Bombers. They probably have a lot of talent there, and they thought he was expendable. And, you know, another man's trash is another man's treasure. So hopefully he comes in, does his thing, and makes an impact.
Well, yeah, you've been talking about it. I've seen you on Twitter, and you've talked, you and I, when we chat, we've talked about it as well. You keep saying, we don't know when Abdul Kinney's coming back. It looked like he was going to play against BC. He was at practice for a couple of days. I even went on the BC Lions Den podcast last week. They had me on to talk Ticats, and I said, hey, looks like Abdul Kinney is going to play. And then the very next day, I look like a fool because, no, Abdul Kinney is not going to play. Doesn't look like he's going to play this week either, from reports. So, like, this will be 4 games, 5 weeks that he's missed. If he misses one more game, why wasn't he put on the 6-game list? Like, what's going on? Like, this is – we're getting into a third of the season, and I don't even know what's injured.
No, I don't. Yeah, that's the thing. We just don't know what the extent of the injury is, where he's injured, what it is. It's very frustrating that, you know, they bring in this big name that's supposed to help out in their biggest off-season signing. And he just, week after week, we don't know what's happening. And I don't know when he's going to come back. I don't know if he'll be back by Labor Day. I don't know if he'll be back. And the next game, like you said, you don't think he will be. So this is a long time to wait for a guy that's supposed to be one of our best defensive players.
And he never got hurt in Ottawa, so I don't understand what the heck happened. It's very frustrating, very frustrating. So, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about Frederick. So I think it's a good signing. You think it's a good signing? I'm curious to see. Apparently he's going to get some playing time against the Eskimos. He's at least going to be on the roster, so maybe we're going to get to see a little bit from him. I think, again, adding talent to the secondary is never a bad idea. Find the right guys. I don't care how long it takes. Find the right 5 guys to play back there. Get it right, and then we could stop talking about it.
Right, but we need to get it right quick because, I mean, yes, it's only 3 games in, but we're 0-3, and we can't keep losing games and expect to be in it by the end of the season. I mean, maybe we can go on a big tear, but we can't count on that. We have to start winning some games now.
You know what? If this team had the ability to go on a big tear, they wouldn't be 0-3.
Exactly. So let's get it together here. Come on.
Indeed. Okay, so let's talk some CFL news. Let's talk a couple veterans that were released in the last couple of days. 2 guys that maybe the Ticats will be interested in. 2 guys that I'm sure Ticat fans have been bombarding on Twitter with. Come to Hamilton. The Lions cut Swayze Waters, and the Owls cut Ryan Phillips. Which one of these moves surprised you the most, do you think?
The Swayze Waters. You know, BC signs him in the offseason. He's one of the best kickers in the league when he's healthy. But I guess they found that long kid, and he's been doing a pretty good job, and they figured they could save some money, so they let Swayze go. The Ryan Phillips, was he just not released from the Lions?
Yeah, the Lions. I don't know if they released. I think they did. They either released him or they decided not to. Or he was a free agent because his contract's up, but I'm fairly certain he was released by BC.
Yeah, so 2 teams have him, don't like what they see. I'm not interested in bringing in either of these guys. Now, Swayze Waters is a great kicker, don't get me wrong, but he's going to ask for, you know, a lot of money. And if we have a guy like Castillo right now who's doing a good job and probably costs a lot less, you know, why bother going after someone else?
I agree. I love Swayze Waters, especially as a punter. I will never forget, and I probably said this on the show a few times, the 2014 Labor Day Classic, the very first game at Tim Hortons Field, he had 2 punts that landed out at the 1-yard line. They were absolutely gorgeous. But again, like you said, he's going to command some bigger bucks. He's obviously injured because that's why he wasn't playing in BC. He got hurt in training camp, and all we need now is more injured guys coming onto this team with undisclosed injuries. But that's how he lost his job, and I would like to see him here. But like I said earlier, I think Sergio Castillo has earned his spot on this team, and I don't think it would be fair to him, and I don't think there's any reason to bring in Waters. And Phillips, yeah, you're right. 2 teams have let him go. I still think he can play. I really do. But would he help Hamilton secondary? I don't know. If he's lost a step or if he's not the playmaker he once was, I mean, maybe bring him in for the games against Montreal because Ryan Phillips does tend to intercept Darian Durant quite a few times. So,
right.
But other than that, yeah, I think you nailed it on both guys, Mike.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the kicking and the punting isn't a problem right now, so I don't see why we'd bring in a guy that would cost a lot of money.
I totally agree with you. So now it's time to move on to what I think is everyone's favorite segment, the Bozo of the Week. And holy smokes, did we have a lot of people to choose from this week. We could have picked the ref in the Winnipeg-Toronto game that cost that young lady $1 million. Except we both talked about that and kind of agree that the penalty, probably not a penalty, but you never know.
Yeah.
We had Rod Peterson, who is a multi-time Bozo on this show before. I will read the tweet because I think these honorable mentions deserve the mention. Someone tweeted at Rod, agree with me that the 13th man in the 09 Grey Cup is no longer the most catastrophic penalty in the history of the game. Hashtag, what about Karen? Rod Peterson's response, and this is so tone deaf, I can't even believe he'd write it. He's already said in response that the 13th man penalty cost us far, in all caps, more than $1 million. Not close. However, Karen now has an idea of how the Riders felt that day. I don't know if he's just an idiot or if he's literally just trying to be a troll, but how do you say something like that? Like, what a maroon.
Yeah, I did not see that tweet because I am blocked by him on Twitter, but that's a different story. Yeah, both Bozo worthy for sure.
But where are you going?
But I'm going to have to go with the social media guys at TSN for messing up so many times about the CFL games this weekend.
Oh, my God. Dude, I started keeping track because I thought it was so funny. Five times. They had five tweets that were screwed up. I took screen caps of them, so I'll read them out. So the first one said, the at Montreal Alouettes defeat the at Red Blacks 30-23 for their first W of the season. At EJAC09, Ernest Jackson finishes with 118 yards on four receptions and a touchdown. So in that one tweet alone, here's what's incorrect. The Owls didn't defeat the Red Blacks. They defeated the Stampeders. It wasn't their first win of the season. It was their second. And Ernest Jackson did not score a touchdown. So that was the first one. So take a screenshot of it, put it up there. It's like so many things wrong with it. Then they fix it. And they say the Montreal Alouettes defeat the Calgary Stampeders 30-23 for their second W of the season. Ernest Jackson finishes with 118 yards, four receptions, and a touchdown. So they got close. They got close. But the touchdown still did not happen. So
it's
then,
just...
hold on, I'm not done.
Okay.
I am
All
not
right.
done. Then they finally get it right. And by getting it right, what do they do? They just completely remove Ernest Jackson from the entire conversation. They say the Alouettes defeat the Stampeders 30-23 for their second win of the season in the first matchup of Friday Night Football. So that game's over. Thinking, okay, done. All right. It was a screw up. It was fun to play around. I had a little fun with Janin, who used to be on the Bleed Red Blacks podcast. They're not doing anymore. We were joking about back and forth about it. And then the second game of the doubleheader happens, Mike. And in the second game, they tweet out, we're through one quarter at the Red Blacks, and the Red Blacks lead the Edmonton Eskimos 3-0 on a field goal from Brad Maher. Brad Maher.
Red Blacks again?
Well, the Red Blacks and the Eskimos, they were playing.
Yeah, they
that's
did
correct.
Play. They did.
But
yeah,
his
yeah,
name
that's
is
right.
Brett.
Yeah. His yeah,
name
I know. I know it's
Brett.
Yeah.
And then, last but certainly not least, the final screw up. It simply says Lindley powers in for six for the Eskies. They were talking about Ryan Lindley, who is the backup quarterback for the Ottawa Redblacks.
Yeah.
Just wow.
Are they even paying attention here? Come on, guys. I mean,
wow.
You guys are supposed to be the representer. You know, you carry all the games. You're supposed to know what you're talking about when you were putting stuff out there. So, yeah, Bozo of the Week goes to them. Also, another Bozo could go to me for my screw-up of the All-Canadian team. So I'll give myself a Bozo as well.
You know what? That's only a half Bozo. That's only you made two mistakes. They made four. So they made twice as many screw-ups as you did. But, man, oh, man, like, look, I get it. It's probably some intern who either doesn't get paid much, doesn't get paid at all. But come on, like, how do you screw – like, okay, the touchdown thing, maybe I could kind of understand because he did have a long bomb that got – but to screw up the team, screw up who the players play for, to screw up the names, that's just inexcusable.
Yeah, it's pretty sad to see. I mean, maybe he was probably like a Toronto kid. He's probably an NFL snob or something.
I mean, like, it was funny and it did provide for some laughs, but it's also pretty sad that, like you said, the league's broadcaster would make a mistake like this. That's just, come on, guys, give your head a shake.
Yeah, get it together, guys.
Okay, you ready to talk about this upcoming game, Mike? Ticats Eskimos?
I am.
All right, quick turnaround for the Black and Gold as the Ticats host the Eskies this Thursday at Tim Hortons Field, just 5 days after their loss to the Lions. The Eskimos enter this game at 3-0, the lone undefeated team remaining in the CFL, while the Ticats, as we all know, sit at 0-3 and are one of two winless teams, but the only pointless team. The Red Blacks do have that tie, so they do have a point in the standings. Despite all this, despite the fact that it's an undefeated team going against a winless team, I feel oddly optimistic about this game, Mike. Maybe it's because the Eskimos have looked really good. Don't get me wrong. I've been impressed with the Eskimos, but they haven't looked dominant or great. And I saw the Ticats show a little something, show a little life against the BC Lions. There were two quarters there where they were the better football team on the field. They just didn't get a chance to do much. They didn't get enough done, is what I'm saying. But I think the Cats actually have a chance to win this one. Am I crazy?
Maybe a little bit. I'm not sure. I'm hoping you're right. I mean, I've heard some rumblings that Bowman might be a little nicked up. He might not even play this game. So that could add to the, possibilities of the Ticats winning.
If Darius, look, the Edmonton Eskimos still have a ton of talent. Trayvon Van looked great last week against Ottawa. Brandon Zylstra has picked up where he left off last season. Vidal Hazelston is still there. He's a good player. There's a lot of talent on that Eskimos team. But if they didn't have a Darius Bowman, that would be a pretty big blow and give the Ticats maybe a chance to win this game. You know, you always want to beat a team at full strength, but hey, this is professional sports and you got to play who you got to play. And if Bowman's out helps Ticats, I can't really be mad about it.
No, I mean last week when they played Lule, when Lule played, I was like, well, you know, I thought maybe that it would be an advantage to the Ticats, but we're not talking about that game anymore. But yeah, you're right. If Bowman's not there, I mean, Riley and Bowman, you know, there's that connection. That's his go-to guy. It always has been. It always will be. So if he's not in the game, that gives us a better chance.
All right. So I'm going to talk a little about the offense here before I throw to you in the defense. And it's kind of generic this week, nothing really too specific, but they really just need to be more consistent. Like I said in the game against the Lions, had they not gone into that lull for two quarters, they may have actually beat BC. And BC looks like one of the best teams in this league. We know they're going to be a team that's competing for the Grey Cup. So the Ticats, even though they lost by 15, they were in that game and they might have actually won if they would have shown 60 minutes of ball instead of 30. And they also, just like in the last game, they need to take advantage of any break the defense gives them. That's what they didn't do against BC. But if Mike Riley throws a couple picks, or if they're second and longs, for crying out loud, get the bloody defense off the field on second and long. Just do it. Just do it. Like, they need, if the defense is playing well, the offense needs to take advantage of that. And they used the run well last week, but they kind of got away from it when I think the score got a little lopsided and they really couldn't do much. It was pointless to run the ball. They were down by so much, but maybe run a little bit more early, maybe eat up some clock. We know Edmonton has a great offense, but they can't score if they aren't on the field. So those are kind of what I'm looking for. Just be more consistent, take advantage of the defense, and maybe this is beating my head against the wall, run the ball a little more early on to keep Edmonton's offense off the field.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. You know, it's tough against that Edmonton defense. That front four is exceptional for the Eskimos. So, you know, it might be hard to run the ball, but you can't get scared, okay? If it doesn't work on one play, you gotta, go back to it. You gotta. That's the way that, you get some good offensive production. If the defense thinks you're gonna run the ball, maybe then maybe they won't, drop back into coverage every single play or pin the ears back and just go up to the quarterback. So yeah, you're right. Give the ball more to Thorman and let him do his thing.
For sure. All right, Mike. Defensive side of the ball. What are you kind of looking at in this game?
I'm looking at the coverage again. I thought it was good for parts of the game, and I'm hoping it improves throughout this game because, you know, even if Bowman's out, he's still going to have a lot of talent out there on the field. He's still going to have a lot of players to throw to, and, they'll be running the ball and all that stuff. But the secondary needs to be better. They gave up way too many yards in every single game this year. It's been rough. So I just want to see improvements out of that. I think if the secondary can improve, then everything else will be better. You know, if they can cover some guys, then they'll get more pressure and vice versa. So I'm just really focusing on the secondary, and I want to see turnovers again. You know, they had a couple turnovers in the game. Yes, we maybe didn't take advantage of those turnovers, but we need to get some turnovers to give the offense some advantages on the field.
Give the offense a short field, and they should be able to put up some points, or they better bloody well be able to. And yeah, if both teams are both sets of you know, the offense and the defense are in lockstep here, this game does not look as daunting as it should, considering the records of these two teams. Maybe because it's in Hamilton. I think if this was in Edmonton, I don't think I'd be as bullish on the Ticats as I am. But this feels like a game that they can win. And if they don't, I don't think there's any way they win those two games. They're not going to win in Calgary. That's like, I'm not even going to bother thinking that they could possibly pull off that upset. And then they got to go into Edmonton. We're looking at 0-6. We really, really are. And yes, the East is not good and all that other sorts of stuff that people keep trotting out. And yes, the BC Lions, they went 0-5 and won the Grey Cup. It doesn't matter. If this team gets in an 0-6 hole, that's going to be really, really hard to dig out of.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, on the offense, you got to see more consistency from the defense. I mean, we had a good first half, I thought, but then they fell off. So they just need to put 4 quarters together. I know that's a tall task for these guys, but I'm hoping that they can do it.
All right, Mike, let's do our CFL picks. We got 5 games this week. Lots of football to watch. That's going to be a lot of fun. We start Wednesday night. So this show is going to go up Wednesday morning. So this will this game will take place in a few hours from the time you hear this. We got the Montreal Alouettes heading to the nation's capital, take on the Ottawa Redblacks. Mike, who do you have in this?
I'm going to take the underdog. I'm going to take the Alouettes. I have I've been overly impressed with the Redblacks this year so far. Trevor Harris in particular. I know he's a good quarterback, but he just hasn't shown me a lot so far. So I'm going to take the upset with the Alouettes. They got a solid defense, and I think that the offense, if they get clicking, they could be a pretty good team.
So the Redblacks play 2 games this week, and for the Tiger Cats, they're both against Eastern opponents. They host the Owls, and they head on the road to Toronto on Monday. We'll get to that one later on. The best thing for the Tiger Cats is for Ottawa to win both these games, because that puts Ottawa at 2 wins, keeps Montreal at 2 wins, keeps Toronto at 2 wins. Even if the Ticats lose, they're 2 wins out of a playoff spot. So the best thing to happen for the Ticats would be for Ottawa to beat these two teams. But I got the Owls too. Something about Ottawa this year just seems like they're snake bit. They come close, and I feel like they're going to be in almost every game they play. But I think they're going to lose more than they win, and they're good. They just keep finding different ways to lose. It seems like one bad thing happens against Toronto a couple weeks ago. It was the bobbled snap that led to a touchdown, and then against Edmonton this week, it was the very controversial: was it a lateral? Was it not a lateral? That was deemed a lateral. That was returned for a touchdown, and it's just there's just something about this Ottawa team where they shoot themselves in the foot and then they rebound, but not enough. So I too am taking the Owls in this game against Ottawa. Second game Thursday night here in Hamilton, the Ticats host the Eskimos. Mike, who are you taking in this one?
Fortunately, I'm taking the Eskimos. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the Ticats will win, and I think they do have a shot. But just for betting purposes, I got to go with Edmonton.
It's tough not to take the Eskimos here, but I'm letting my heart kind of outvote my head here. I'm going to take the Ticats because I think they can win this game. I said it earlier. I feel like this game is, I don't know if it's necessarily a trap game for Edmonton, if it's the short week for both teams, and Hamilton's at home, so it's less cumbersome on them. They don't have to travel. I don't know. This just feels like one of those games. I had this feeling with Montreal and Calgary last week. Before the game started, I'm like, I even tweeted, I was like, there's something, maybe it's the hunger in my belly, but my stomach feels like Montreal's going to win this game. And they did. And I think this team might win. You could say that about every team in every game. I'm not saying I'm patting myself on the back for that. No, I'm not like patting myself on the back for it. You know what I mean? But this game feels, I feel similar to this game. Edmonton's coming in super hot. They're not going to go undefeated. They're going to lose eventually. Hamilton's on the ropes. Everyone's writing them off. This feels like one of those games where Edmonton comes in, kind of lays an egg, and Hamilton maybe wins like 23-16. Like, it's not a very high-scoring game. It's maybe an ugly game. But, hey, even an ugly win would look like Kate Upton in a string bikini right now. So I'm going to take the Ticats in this one. Friday
Well,
night.
I hope that you got the Josh Tradamus touch in this one
We'll have to wait and see. We'll find out Thursday night. Friday night, I think we got a great game going. Winnipeg heads to BC to take on the Lions. Mike, who do you like in this one?
well. A rematch of the great Western semifinal of last year. Yeah, it should be a great game. I am gonna have to pick the Lions, though. I like the Bombers. I think they're a pretty good team. I think they're probably gonna be a playoff team this year, but I gotta pick the Lions.
I too am picking the Lions. Winnipeg has a chance in this because they're going to have some film on Travis Lule. Lule's going to start this one, but he looked so good against Hamilton. Those receivers are still all there. That offense is clicking. They put up 41 points. Yes, it was against Hamilton, but still, it's not easy to do on any team. I think Winnipeg is a lot better than I pegged them to be, but it's in BC, so I'll give the slight edge to the home team in this one. Saturday, our fourth game sees the Riders go into Calgary to take on the Stamps. Calgary's coming off their first loss of the season. Please, Mike, take the Riders. Come on, do it. Do it.
I'm going to take the Riders. It's crazy. It's absolutely bonkers insane, but I'm going to take the Riders in the upset. I just have a feeling. Mike Stradamus.
That is. Are you being serious? I can't.
I'm being serious. I'm taking them. I'm taking them.
That is ballsy. I don't think Calgary has lost two in a row since like 2012. So they're at home. They didn't lose there at all last year. This is a gutsy pick. If this comes through, I hope you put some money on this game because if this comes through, you're going to make yourself some pretty decent coin. Anyway, I'm taking
I'm
Calgary.
hope. Yeah. It's a smart pick. It is obviously a smart pick. At home, I mean, you pretty much got up, but I'm just throwing it out there. I'm going with the Riders.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes you got to take a shot. I'm taking a bit of one on Hamilton. I thought they. Hey, if you're right, you get to come on here next week and brag about it. So, hey, it takes guts to make that pick, and I respect those guts. Okay, last game of the week, Monday Night Football, CFL style. The Ottawa Redblacks play their second game in 5 days, their third in 11 days. This one on the road against a very well-rested Toronto Argonauts team. Mike, who do you like in this one?
I'm gonna go with the Argos because, they're at home. They're playing in front of the '96 and '97 teams, Grey Cup championship teams. I think that's gonna be a little bit more motivation for this team. And I think Toronto's a pretty good solid unit. So I gotta go with the Argos because of all those reasons.
Yeah, I'm taking the Argos too, which means we're both taking the Red Blacks to lose these two games and stay winless. That's tough because I feel like they gotta win one of these. But
Yeah, when I think about it now, I'm like, maybe I should have picked it in the first one, but oh well.
yeah, you know what? I'm gonna stick with the Argos as well. I just for the reasons you said, I just think that right now they got Mark Trestman there, and Mark Trestman, no offense to Rick Campbell, I know he's won a Grey Cup, but if you're giving me a choice between Mark Trestman and Rick Campbell as the coach that I'm gonna put some faith in, it's always going to be Mark Trestman. If the Argos cannot take stupid penalties, they would probably be 3-1 at this point, if not 4-0. It's dumb
Yeah,
penalties that are hurting this team.
they would have had a shot last week if those hits to the head were called near the end of the game. I mean, they could have been a different game. So it was a close game against the Bombers. They played a pretty good game against the Bombers. So yeah, but yeah, Argos is my pick.
All right, so we got two different this week. I'm taking the Cats, you're taking the Eskimos. I'm taking the Stamps, and you are incredibly taking the Riders. That is maybe the ballsiest pick anyone's ever made on this show in the 3 years we've been doing picks. So kudos to you, Mike, for that one. If it comes through, I will give you your props at the beginning of next week without even hesitating, sir.
Speaking of props, I just want to give a shout out. I know this guy probably doesn't listen, but I was at the Eskimos game last week and I was at the will call waiting, trying to get a ticket. And this older gentleman comes up to me and asks if I'm just looking for a single ticket with his granddaughter. And I said yes. And he had four season tickets and he was sitting about the 45-yard line, beautiful seats. He sold me tickets for $30 and they're probably $60, $70 tickets. So just to give a shout out to that gentleman. He was a really cool guy, and I had a great time watching the game with him.
Oh, that is awesome here. You know what? That's right out of the CFL playbook, man. That is
Yeah.
what this league is about. That is awesome to hear. That's a great story. I'm glad you shared that, Mike.
Yeah, and he got my information, so he's gonna contact me if he has free tickets in the upcoming in the season. So yeah, it was great to meet that dude.
That was awesome. How old was his granddaughter?
I'm guessing she, 18, 20. She was a pretty girl. I don't know, like, you can't tell these days, you know, how old the ladies are, but nice girl and wonderful grandfather.
Awesome. That's so cool to hear. So, speaking of props, we have an over under. We got two questions this week. This was going to be the second one, but the segue was just too good for me to pass up. So we got Adam with another over-under for us this week. He says over-under 630 points, which is 35 points a game, allowed by the Ticats this season. Mike, what are you taking, the over or the under?
Well, I have to say we're probably on pace for the over.
We are. We are current. Yes, the Ticats are currently on pace to give up 660 points this season.
I'm going to be an optimist here, and I'm going to say the defense is going to improve as we go along here, so I'm going to go under.
I, too, am going under. The worst Ticats defense that I think we have seen recently was that one in 2012 under George Cortez with Casey Crehan as the defensive coordinator, and that unit only gave up 576 points. That's still a lot of freaking points, but it's nowhere near 630. It's still almost 60 points less than that. So I don't think this defense is as bad as that one. I think there's way more talent on this defense. I think it might come close. They might give up, you know, 570 some odd points. It might come close to that Casey Crehan defense. 630, 35 a game. I don't think so. I'm going to take the under on that one for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that 2012 defense was just horrendous, and I don't think we're as bad as we were back then.
No, I can't think that, because that was one of the worst defenses. Like I said, I think it's the worst defense we've seen.
Hell of an offense.
Oh, great offense. That year. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think they led the league in scoring that year, but they also led the league in points given up. So that's why they finished 6-12, and Cortez was fired after one season.
Exactly. So yeah, we'll both be optimists and go under.
All right. Second question. This one to me is a lot of fun. So we've obviously been doing some stuff with Canadian players and all this other stuff. So Claudio came up with a great question. He says, you can pick one Tiger Cat from any era to play on the team right now. Who do you take? Claudio's pick was a really good one. He picked Dave Hack, one of the best offensive linemen I've ever seen.
Yep.
Awesome player. Great pick by Claudio. So, Mike, who's your Tiger Cat from the entire history of the franchise that you would want to see play on the team right now?
See, this is tough for me to go back before I was born and all that stuff. So I'm going to go to my glory days of watching the Ticats in 98 and 99. Nolando Steinhauer was just a beast out there in the secondary. He was, you know, I'm pretty sure he had, you know, a crazy amount of interceptions in either 98 or 99. So I think he'd be great to slide him in to this secondary and get some turnovers.
Oh, my God. When you were talking, I was like, oh, my God, he's going to pick the same guy I am. Because I took a guy from that team, those teams as well. But I went a little different. I took Rob Hitchcock. And here's why. Canadian player. And he would help with the ratio. You could stick him at safety. You could stick him at Sam linebacker if you wanted to. But I would put him at safety. And then you kick Courtney Steven out to that wide side corner position. Now you got two Canadians starting in the secondary. You don't have to rush Craig Butler back at any point. Rob Hitchcock to me is you know, he's the prototype for a guy like Craig Butler. So I love your Orlando Steinhauer pick. That's a great pick. But I went same, fixing the secondary, helping the secondary out. But I went with a Canadian to help out with the ratio as well. Two birds, one stone.
Yeah, I love – I was a huge – I have a Rob Hitchcock jersey still. So I was a huge Rob Hitchcock fan. I love watching him play safety, you know, laying out people, just throwing those big hits. He was one hell of a player. I love that pick.
Yeah, it was. I was with you. I didn't want to take a guy that I'd never seen play, so pretty much eliminated anyone from like 1990 and earlier. Because, I thought Joe Montford, but then it was like, well, the defensive line is pretty good. I don't think they need a guy like Joe Montford. Then I thought, okay, maybe Grover Covington. Like, I started thinking about all the guys that I. But it's like, where does this team need the most help? Like Darren Flutie was obviously a choice. Danny McMahon. Like, these are some of the great guys that played when we watched the team growing up when they won their last Grey Cup. But I was thinking, like, well, what does this team need? And what this team needs is help in the secondary. And obviously we were thinking the same thing, but you went with the guy who's clearly probably the best player that played in that secondary, and I went with the guy that I thought was the best Canadian. So, man, if we could get both those guys back, oh, that secondary would be awesome.
That'd be a doozy.
All right, so that's it for this week. Remember, everyone out there, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and we are also now on Google Play and Stitcher. or as always, you can listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to slide Mike or myself a question, you can do so on Twitter. So, Mike, give him your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am JoshSmith_82. And, of course, you can always post questions for us in the comment section of 3downnation. Or you can fire us off an email. And we actually got an email this week. We didn't really get a chance to touch on it because I think the show was pretty packed with stuff and we didn't want to take it too long. But there was some stuff in there that I'm saving for a future episode. So maybe an off season. There's a great idea for us to do something that I think would be really well done for an off season episode when we're looking for things to talk about. But if you want to send us off an email, feel free to. You can find us podski@gmail.com. So I look forward to seeing some more emails in there. So that was episode 80. 80, Mike, of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.